Okay, the boys, today's daf is daf Pei Gimel. We're finishing off the exciting perek of Perek Meruba, starting on a new perek, Perek HaChoyvel. And we're up to the last line of Pei Beis Amid Beis, where the Gemara quotes from the Gemara that we learned yesterday. As you remember, we learned that because of a Maisa Noira, what was the Maisa Noira? There was a terrible battle in the Beis Chashmonoi between the Hyrcanus people and the Aristobulus people, to the point where, Rachmana Litzlan, one of them was in siege over the other one, and then the schus that kept them going, the people inside Yerushalayim, what kept them going was that they brought the Karban Tumid every day, until a Zokin Echad, let's just look quickly at the Lashon HaGemara, so it'll go quicker. If you look right before the wide lines, the Gemara was quoting from a Megadim Chazeinim Chalmokim, first wide line, yesterday's Gemara, Pei Beizim at Beiz, Tana Rabbana, Kishtar Beiz Chanoi Zeh Al Zeh, when the Beiz Chashmonoi were fighting and having a siege one against the other, Hayi Hyrcanus Mibifnim, Aristobulus Mibichutz, the Hyrcanus people were inside, Aristobulus people were from the outside, B'chol Yom Mishal Shalehem Bekupa Dinrim, every day they allowed a box or a basket to go down with money, V'yimal Lehem to meet him, and then they would go and send up from outside the Karban Tamid. The reason why they didn't have any behemoths in Yerushalayim to go and bring the carbon, it's like we learned in the Mishnah, you can't be Megadol Behemoth Daka. So therefore they had to import it. So you have these people outside every morning sending up the carbon Tamid for Tamid Shel Shacha, Tamid Shel Ben Aboyim, in exchange for the money that was sent out to them. Hayisham Zakin Echad, there was one Zakin, Shoyim Makib Chachab Sivanis, he knew Chachmas Yivanis. We will explain what that means shortly. He told them, as long as the people inside have the schus of the Beis Hamikdash bringing the kabbonis every single day, will never succeed because they have that tremendous schus of bringing the carbon. For the next day, again they send down money with the kupa like they did for the last who knows how many days, weeks, months. The Heluham Chazir, instead of sending up two nice shepselach, they send back Rachmon Litzlon, a Chazir in that kupa, to bring to Yerushalayim. Kimichi Giva Chatzia Choyma, when, as they were lifting up this basket, this box, to bring it back over the wall into Yerushalayim, it got halfway up the wall, not Sipona, B'choyma, the Chazir went and stuck out its nails, and went to put its nails into the wall.
Hooves.
I'm sorry?
Hooves.
Hooves. Okay, good. The word Siponaim is usually defined as nails, but that's fine with me. Fine. The hooves went into the wall. The Mizdaz Eretz Yisrael, Arameis Paris, Arameis Paris. The whole Eretz Yisrael shook as a result from this terrible Maisa Noira of sending up a Chazir, 400 Pasois and 400 Pasois, Boise Shah Amru. And at that time, the Chachamim were Gozer. Aru Ishi Gadol Chazeinim, anybody that goes and raises pigs, Chazeinim Rachmon Litzlan, he should be Ba'ar, he should be cursed. Ba'aru Adam Shilamit is B'nai Chacham Sivanis, and now let her go and teach your son this Chacham Sivanis that this Zokin Echad shared with the people outside, and with that taught them to go and send up the Chazir. Well, Oysa Shah Shanino, about that it was said, Mas Shiba'imim Gagoy Satrifin, Ushte Alechem Ibikas Oin Soicher. Because of the siege, they didn't have immediately tefuah available close to Yerushalayim. They had to go and bring from places which are a little bit more distant. But the focus of the Gemara now is about the Chacham Sivanis, and it says in the Gemara that there's an order, there's a curse on someone who teaches Chacham Sivanis. Freik Gemara Chacham Sivanis Miasira. Now the Gemara in the Havamin assumes that Chacham Sivanis doesn't mean some sort of Greek mythology, but it simply means the Greek language. To speak Greek. V'atani, we learned the Braisa, Omer Rebbe, Be'eretz Yisrael, Loma, Loshet Sursi, Loma, Oy Loshen HaKoydish, Oy Loshen Yivonis. What Rebbe is saying is in Eretz Yisrael, people should speak in a dignified, refined manner, and therefore they shouldn't go and speak Sursi, they should rather go and speak either Loshen HaKoydish, Loshen HaKoydish, or Loshen Yivonis, or Greek. Greek is considered to be a language of the nobility, of the aristocracy, of the chush of the people. Sursi was considered to be a corrupted dialect of Aramaic. It wasn't your regular Aramaic, but it was a corrupted form of Aramaic. So therefore Rabbi says, why should people speak that way? It's almost like a slang language. It's a corrupted language. Don't. Yomer Rabbi Yosef said the same thing by uns. Bavel, Loshen Arami Lama. Why should we speak Aramaic? Loshen Hegde, Hakoydish, Loshen Parsi. Parsi is Persian. there apparently the people didn't speak Sursi. And therefore he says, of all the choices, either speak Lashon Kodesh or speak the Persian language, which is also a distinguished, refined language. Don't go and speak this cheap Aramaic language. Anyway, what do I see from this? That Rebbe himself said the Lashon Yevonis is a choshevah language. And here you're telling me that it's an Orer, you're not allowed to go and teach Chochmas Yevonis. Everything more Amri Lashon Yevonis L'chud, Chochmas Yevonis L'chud. These are two separate concepts. Lashon Yevonis to teach Greek, not only allowed to teach Greek, the Gemara considers this to be a refined language of the choshevah people.
You have a Sefer Torah in Greek. You live in
Sefer
Megillah.
Mm-hmm.
Even a Sefer Torah written in Greek is.
The Gemara says in Sefer Megillah that the Yevoni has a special mala over many other languages. And our Gemara now continues on, but Chochmas Yevonis L'chud, but Chochmas Yevonis has nothing to do with Lashon Yevonis. Now, what was in fact Chochmas Yevonis? So Rashi says in the third and the fourth line, Chochmas Yevonis, b'nei Paltin, ha'krev l'malchus m'saprim bo. This was a special language that was used by the b'nei Paltin, people that lived in the palace, that were close to the regime, close to the kingdom. They spoke this special language. Now, Rashi doesn't really give us much more explanation of what was special about this language, but this same Gemara is also brought at a couple of places in Menachos and in Soita. And in Menachos, the Gemara says, Rashi says, Biramizois. Biramizois means through a form of code language, a form of sign language. This wasn't just the normal language that people spoke. This was a language that was like a special code that only very, very few people in the government knew. Those people that had the special security emails, and then they would delete them all the time, 20 or 30,000 of them. But the point is that this was a very, very special code. Your average individual didn't know this and didn't speak it. And that's the reason why this Zaken Echad, he didn't want the masses to know, he didn't want to identify himself as being the Russia, that's the one that's giving the Eitzah to go and send up the Chazir. So therefore he spread in this code language that only certain very choice individuals knew, and they were the ones that plotted together to go and set up the Chazir, as opposed to a regular Karm Tumid like they did every single day. So therefore the Or is not referring to your normal Lashon Yevonis, that you're allowed to teach, that you're allowed to learn. This Chochmas Yevonis is this special royal language only used by the royalty with the special code terms. That is awesome, you're now allowed to go and teach it. The Rambam says that we don't even know what it is today because it no longer exists. At least we have a concept of what it was about. Frank Timura, the Chochmas Yevonis Miyasira was Chochmas Yevonis Asur. Vom Rav Yiram Shmuel, Mishim Rav Shim Gamliel. Eini Oyle Nafshi Mikol Benois Iri is a pasuk in Eicha, which unfortunately we learned only 2 weeks ago. What does it say in this pasuk? That my eyes are crying and mourning Mikol Benois Iri more than anybody else in Yerushalayim, anybody else in Eretz Yisrael over the terrible Harbin. Rav Shim Gamliel now is telling about his own Harbin in his day and age. What happened to his Harbin? Elif Yiladim Hayu B'Beis Abba. I remember there were 1,000 kids in the home of our father, the father being the head of Eretz Yisrael, he was the Nasi. What's going on?
Biryani.
Hopefully not the same type like we have in Chazal.
It's
quiet? Maybe they're outside. Everything okay? Kol b'seder? Maybe outside is the problem. For those of you that are listening on the tape, there was some noise outside, so we're going to see whether Mashiach, in fact, is about to arrive, or whether there's something else that caused the noise. Checking down below. Mashiach probably is not coming from downstairs, but you never know. Ronnie Kobeseda, Ronnie. Everything okay?
Politics.
Ah, okay.
He says politics.
Reb David.
It's a heated politics, not just politics.
Reb David, Kim. Anyway, continuing the Gemara. Baruch Hashem, everything is okay. Unfortunately, Mashiach did not arrive as we had hoped. At least not yet. so we still have a chance for later today. But anyway, continuing back to the Gemara, so Reb Shimon Gamliel says that any oyle nafshim mikol benos iri elif yiladim hoyu bebeis abba. Reb Shimon Gamliel is probably doesn't mean that he had 1,000 brothers and sisters, but rather what he's saying is bebeis abba. The Reb Shimon Gamliel was the nasi of Klal Yisrael, and so was his father, Rabban Gamliel. That was several doiris in their family. So he's saying in that beis hanasi, or perhaps under the aegis, under the auspices of the beis hanasi, there were 1,000 kids. And Chomish Meis Mehem Lomdu Torah. Five of them were learning in yeshiva, learning in Koil. Chomish Meis Lomdu Chachmas Yivanis. Five of them learned this Chachmas Yivanis. And of all of them, Alishnaim Behem Elani Kan Vachain Achi Abba Ba'asya. Of the entire 1,000, the only one that was left is me, and Achi Abba, an uncle that I have in Asya. The Gemara doesn't tell us what the circumstances are. The Gemara Mesechta's Gittin has a very similar to Gemara, which we learn on Tisha B'Av, and the Gemara explains that Reb Shimon Gamliel that we're talking about lived at the times of Beitar and the times of Bar Kochva. And this is referring to that after the defeat of Bar Kochva by the Romans and the capturing of Beitar and the slaughtering of Beitar, apparently the 1,000 were there at that time, and unfortunately they were all killed out. Of the 1,000, 998 were killed out and 2 were left. Therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel is bemoaning the fate of his mishpucha and of his friends and his colleagues. Okay, Blamaisa, what does it have to do with us? What I see from this is that 500 people learn Chachmas Yivanis. And this is talking about after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, which was the Beitar and Bar Kochva, were approximately the year 100, 120, 130 of the Common Era, which is about 40 years or so after, 50 years or so after the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And if that's the case, by that time this order had been in effect. How could 500 people be learning this Chachmas Yivanis? Ever the Gemara Amri Shana Beis Ram Gamliel. Shaya Kroivim Malchus. The reason is because the Ram Gamliel's family and the people of that were part of the government, they were all Kroivim Malchus. Ukiratanya, like we learned in the Braisa, Hab Mesaper Koimi, person that the word Mesapovi doesn't mean to teach or to speak, but rather from Lashon Tisporas. Tisporas means from a haircut. Person who takes a Koimi haircut. This is considered to be like the Minhagim of the Amoiri. Now, what exactly Mesapa? Koimi Rashi has 2 pshatim. Rashi says, if you look, Koimi Lifnim Bemetzach, it's about 10-12 lines from the top of the Amud. What does it say? Midarchi Amoiri. She Mesaprim Lifnim Mishayrim Beloidis Machrem. They would go and cut off the hair from the front of their heads and only leave hair in back of the head. We normally think of the word bloidus as being a chup, but in our case we're talking about a person that has the equivalent of a ponytail. So in the front of their heads, there you would go and give them a baldy, and only from the back they had this huge amount of hair, which presumably they put together as a ponytail in back. That was 1 minute. They would go and remove the hair from on top of the oizen. This reminds us of the Gemara that tells us about the Isser of Baal Takif. Baal Takif means the din of Sakifu Eis Pas Roichem. You're not allowed to remove your payas. So the classic Baal Takif was that they used to go and take all of the hair around their heads, and they would go and remove all of it, so that it would be the same as the Meitzach, same as a forehead, just like there's no hair on the forehead. They would make that all around, on top of the ears and the back, it would all be without any hair, and only hair on top of the head. You see sometimes the Goyim have this haircut today, and I think they call it the mushroom, or they probably have other names for it. But anyway, the point is that you only see the hair in the middle, and everywhere else around it, they would take the hair off. If you ever see wood carvings of the Alta Galochim from years ago, they also show them sometimes no hair all the way around, only hair on the top of the head.
There were no payas.
Therefore, no payas, exactly. And that's the Baal Takifu. Anyway, so Gemara tells us that in the Beis Ram Gamliel, 500, not 500, sorry, stop, start again. The Braisa tells us that even though you're not allowed to go and have this disporus of the Koimi, because it's dark, we are Moiri, Thomas Bar Uvain, he did have this disporus Koimi. Now, it's easier to go and learn like the first pshat in the Rashi, that he had this bloidis malamata, that he had this ponytail, because it's only a problem with Darki Amayri. If Rashi means in the second pshat, Taka, to remove the payas totally, the Chari would be a little bit more difficult, because Baal Takif, of course, is an Issa D'Araisa, while Mesaper Koimi is just a minig that you're now going to do out Darki Amayri. Sadzarki and Mori, because they were mate, they should curve the malchus. What's the inyam curve the malchus? That if you needed a toiva from the local kingdom, if a person would be walking around like an obvious Jew, he wouldn't necessarily get such a warm reception. Even today.
It's kind of like nowadays in business, a lot of people use the heter not to wear a kippah.
Exactly right. So the same thing over here, that the reason why they allowed him to mesaper koimi, so that he should be friendly with the malchus, and ever if we ever needed a toiva from any one of the senators, the princes, the whatever, the people of the authorities, he would be the right shtadlan to be able to go and bring the Yeshua.
It's similar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking of the same thing. Shabesam Gamliel Etilam Mesaper the Chachmas Yivanis, Nesha Kerim Malchus. Therefore, this Chachmas Yivanis opened up the doors for the Mishpach and for the people of Besam Gamliel, that they should be able to go and be friendly with the local authorities, the Roman authorities, or others, to be able to go and bring Yeshua's for Klayasam. We learned before in the Braisa, don't go and be Megabel Kelev unless it's tied down with a leash at all times, because a Kelev can be dangerous. There are exceptions to the rule. You're allowed to go and have such dangerous Klovim in a city which is close to the border with the enemies. What's the purpose? During the day, Shitaka be on a leash. However, by night, when the enemies may come stealthily in ambush to try to attack the Jews, then you can go and let this dog run loose. And then, if and when he notices the enemy coming, he will presumably start howling and barking, and that will allow the Jews to wake up and to protect themselves. So you're allowed to use such a guard dog to protect yourself. A person who goes and raises these types of dogs, it's like person raising chazeirim pigs. Now both of them are aser. So what's the dimyon? What's the parallel? Since we said about the chazeirim or ho'ish, a person who's going to have be megadol chazeirim, person megadol klovim is also aser. What does one thing have to do with the other? The curse by the Chazerim had to do with the fact that they went and did this Maisa Noira. They sent up the Chazer, Nizdaz Eretz Yisrael, Abimeis Parsel, Rachman Litzlon. Kelev is Kelev. What does one thing have to do with the other? So Parshat Pshat is that just like Chazerim, that's kind of a danger religiously, if you will, al pi rochnius, a Kelev is danger begashmius. A Kelev causes Nebuch all types of tzaras. However, one of the Mefarshim learns that this Gemara is really unrelated to the Gemara before, and is telling us that there's another reason why you're not going to be Megadol Chazeirim, not only because of this Maisa Noira that happened in the times of the Beis Chashmonai, Horkness, and Aristobulus, but also that Chazeirim are also dangerous. That, I mean, most of us don't walk around with four-legged chazerim, sometimes two-legged chazerim, but not four-legged chazerim walking around on the street. But apparently, these chazerim, if they get close to a human, they also bite and they can also be dangerous. And that's another reason why a person should not be megadol chazerim. And therefore, Blazer says, persons megadol either club or chazerim that are causing damage to the community, they should all be put in chayrim or have this curse on them for not worrying about the rest of civilized society.
But even the other
non-kosher
animals, like horses, I mean, you know,
there was no isser on that. No isser on that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's correct. Amr Yosef Amin Yom Rav Nachman. We spoke about before that you're allowed to be megadol such a kelev, a security dog, a watchdog, if you live near the border. So normally we're talking about Eretz Yisrael being on the border together with its enemies. Rav Nachman says the same thing is when all the Jews live together in Bavel, so then that becomes their, if you will, Eretz Yisrael Shomata, not Eretz Yisrael, but it's where Jews are. So they also need watchdogs to go and protect them, and therefore you're allowed to have these watchdogs. But the Gemara continues on, but Rav Nachman Tirgema Nehedo. He didn't mean the entire Bavel, he meant specifically Nehedo, because Nehedo apparently was next to the border, therefore you had to have watchdogs to go and howl and bark if the enemies were coming to cause tzuras. Darshim Destoy Dimin Biri. So Rav Destoy Dimin Biri says a nice shtikla gadata to go and dramatize the the terrible nature of dangerous and barking and howling dogs. It says in the pasuk Nucha Yoyma Shuv Hashem Rivois Alfi Yisrael, a very famous Chazal, Lamedcha She'en Shechina Shoyr Al Yisrael Pachim Mishnei Alofim Ushnei Revovois Chaser Achas. The pasuk says over here Shuv Hashem Rabbeinu Shalom will return to Revovois. Revovois are 20,000. Alfei is 2,000, 22,000, 22,000. Even get together, the Shechina will be Shoyr. What happens if there are 22,000 minus 1, then the Shechina will not be Shoyr. It'll only have 21,999. So what's going to happen? What happens if you're missing one? Chaser achas. What happens if it happens to me, one lady who's pregnant, among the 21,999? And Miyat Hashem, if she's going to give birth, and Miyat Hashem is going to be 22,000. Oh! The Shechina will be able to go and rest among these masses of Klal Yisrael. Guess what happens? If a caliph comes and were to go and bark, they peel and cause the Rechaz Hashem to be mapel to have a miscarriage. Nim says, Egon Meshchirish is on Yisrael. This caliph, that's the Arur, that's why be careful not to have these types of klavim, because he could cause, through this type of situation, that Shechinish Rechaz Hashem Nistal Yisrael, because we don't have the 22,000 that we're hoping to have with this baby. There was a woman that went into a particular home to go and bake. We had this already already before. Then in the good old days, people didn't all have ovens or stoves in their own homes, and therefore to bake they would often go to a particular bakery or baker or particular neighbor that did have such a stove or such an oven, and they would go and bake their goods there, or their chalas, their breads, whatever. And Novak Bakalva, there was a caliph in that home, and when the caliph saw the caliph started barking. And unfortunately, she was scared. Amla Mori, so now the owner of the dog said, let's stop, you have nothing to worry about. It's a harmless dog. Shkuli Nive, his teeth have been removed. The canine no longer has the canine teeth. You have nothing to worry about. Chas Shalom, he's not dangerous. Amra Lei, so she said to him, Shkuli Tivusech. It's like an expression that they say in Yiddish, Moichel Toivis. Shkili Tivusech, take back your Toiv. In other words, take back your words of appeasement to try to make me feel good. Don't worry, this dog is toothless. Take back your Toivis, Vishajit Chizri, and throw it on the thorn bushes. Kvarnod Vlad, it's already too late. The Vlad is already moving inside. In other words, she's expecting to have an imminent miscarriage, and so therefore, all your words of don't worry, everything is fine, everything is good, it's all too late because the baby is going to be born prematurely, very shortly. So now, we're at the end of the Mishnah. If we go back to the Mishnah back on Ayin Tes Amid Bey, 9b, right at the bottom. The first wide line, it said in the Mishnah, don't go and spread out nets or traps to catch yoinim are doves, unless these traps were 30 ris away from the yishuv where people lived, from the city, from the urban areas, but it's somewhere out far away, 30 ris. Now what's the reason for that? Says Rashi, because if it's going to be close to the yishuv where people are living, people have their own private doves, they will be entrapped in these traps, and therefore you're going to be stealing from other people. But rather go and put in a mokim hefker, like Amidbar, far, far away, rural areas where there are no people living, for miles, or for mills, therefore you don't have to worry about trapping yoinim that belong to people. You're only going to get the hefker dik yoinim. Now how far exactly is 30 ris? So Rashi already told us that's arba milim, that's 4 mil. Each mil is 2,000 amis, so therefore the equivalent of 8,000 amis. Jot yetz the Gemara. Ein parsin shom the yoinim, freitim on mi azi kuli hai. Do the yoinim in fact travel so far? Hey gimel amid aleph, 6 lines from the bottom. But then we learned in the Mishnah. Vishteit Mishnah. A Mishnah in Masechet Bava Basra. It says, Marchikin es ha-shoivich min ha-ir chamishim ama. You only have to go and be marchik, you have to go and distance the shoivich, the dovecot. Dovecot is just like a chicken coop, but this is for chickens and this is for doves. Dovecot, you have to go mimachik, you have to distance from the city 50 amis. What's up is the 50 amis? Says Rashi, Shliafsidu tvu upeirish yisabayir. Next to the city, you had farmland, you might have kromim, you might have vineyards, you might have other orchards. So if you're going to have doves around the city, guess what's going to happen? They're going to go and eat away, chirp away at some of the tfu and some of the peiris, and they're going to cause damage. So therefore, as long as it's 50 amas away, you have nothing to worry about. Now, if you don't have to worry about 50 amas, in our mishnah we said, we're talking about 30 riz, 4 mil, we're talking about 8,000 amas. What's the difference between 8,000 amas and 50 amas? 16 times as much, right? 16? Or 1,600 times as much? 160? Help me out, you're very good at math.
Sorry.
It's, I think, 160 times as much, right? If it would be 80 times 100, that would get us 8,000. So 160 times 50. So you're talking about 160 times as much in the Mishnah Maseches Bava Basra. There it appears that they only travel 50 amas, and here it's 160 times as much, 8,000 amas. Is a chastira. Amr by Meshit Shaiti Tuva Karsai Bechamishimama Malia. Talk to you, Mara, that it's true that the Yoinim can go and travel and fly far, far away. They can go and travel as much as 8,000 amas. So therefore, if you are putting up traps, put your traps at least 8,000 amas away from the local community, so it doesn't go and trap these Yoinim that belong to people. However, if you're talking about their eating habits, once they've gotten through 50 amas, they're already full, they're not going to continue eating. If you look at the Rashi, Karsai b'chamishim malia, about 10 lines to the bottom, the Rashi, b'meshein malaktus manakris b'karka malayim b'chamishim amah. They fill themselves up with 50 amas. As long as they are removed 50 amas away from the city, you don't have to worry about them going and eating up the crops and eating up the fruit. However, in terms of flying, they fly far, far away. Therefore, you have to go and put your traps 30 riz, 8,000 amas away. 8,000 amas sounds like a very far distance, but actually they go and fly much further. If you're talking about a yishuv, which is what we're talking about, where people live l'choira, if that's the case, don't even spread out your traps even 100 mil. Our Mishnah is talking about 30 riz, which is 4 mil. We're talking about 25 times as much, 100 mil. Wow. Everything more, this yishuv that we're talking about is not the same definition as the word yishuv in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah yishuv is talking about where people live. However, says the Gemara, Yosefam v'yishuv kramim, you're talking about a yishuv of vineyards. In other words, this is a very large wine country, and you have tons and tons of vineyards, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And if that's the case, if you have Yoinim living there, they can go, if they live in that area, they can go, says Rashi, Hoylech mikerem lekerem ad lemeirochik. In other words, doves are very concerned about going too far away from the local place where they live. They might get lost. However, as long as they feel heimish, they're next to one kerem, they go from one kerem to the next kerem, next kerem, they presumably figure out that they can go back, return flight, to just go back through all these kerem, they don't have to worry about losing themselves. So therefore, even 100 mil. Rabba Omer b'yishev, shoifchem. We're talking about the Zuhutaka yishev of these dovecuts. Miles and miles of dovecuts. Therefore, they'll keep on flying from one to the next to the next to the next. Right? Therefore, says Yimon, in such a case, is meyamil. Why don't they have to worry about the shoifchem themselves? In other words, that if you're going to go and put up any of these traps, you might trap some of the yoinim from these very shoifchem that are in this yishev shel shoifchem. We're talking about, we're not worried about the doves from the shoifchem themselves, we're only worried about strangers that come from afar. Why? Either because we're talking about shoifchem that belong to goyim, and therefore, although you're not allowed to steal from a goy, if one of the doves wandered into the traps, it's not your problem. Or if it's talking about the hefkedike, in other words, even though the shoifchem over here, they don't belong to anybody, the shoifchem have been there for the last 500 years, and doves constantly in and out and in. So by the day, they were his shoifchem with his doves, so he doesn't have to worry about trapping his own. He only has to worry about trapping the yanims. So therefore, even if he has a whole yishuv of shoifchem, he doesn't have to worry about capturing any of the doves from the shoifchem, because they're all his. Halach merubah, halach merubah, halach merubah. Hey, Panaya Perek, Perek Achoyvel. Okay. What the Mishnah introduces is a very, very famous halacha that we've had many, many times, and that is that if chas v'shalom, someone damages somebody else, he has to pay not only the nezik, but also what we call arba'a dvarim, which means nezik, tsar, ripui, sheves, and poishes. Nezik, of course, is for the damage itself. The tsar is the pain and suffering. Ripui are the medical bills. Sheves is the disability, that he won't be able to work for a day, a week, a month, or longer. Boishes is that's the shame that was caused by now the fact that he is disabled in one shape or other, and therefore because of that busha, you have to pay for that as well. And what Amisha is going to tell us is exactly how you measure them, and what the Gemara is going to tell us is the Makoir, how do we know in fact that you have to pay these five different measures of damages. Someone gave a chabola. Chabola means he wounded somebody else. He has to pay five different measures of damages. What are those five? Benezek, betzar, beripui, beshevis, ubashis. Now, how do you measure these damages? Somebody else, Nebuch, knocks out somebody else's eye, Rahman al-Islam. Nebuch, he knocked off his arm, like he amputated his arm. Shibis ragli caused him a broken leg. Today, of course, this is a little bit difficult. Baruch Hashem, we don't have a slave market, at least not here in America. Who knows, maybe somewhere, Saudi Arabia, somewhere else, actually, they do have. But in the good old days, they did have instances with the Kaaba. In the good old days, they did have, Rahman al-Islam, they had slave markets. So, slaves could be purchased and sold on the marketplace. Okay, this individual,
Baruch Hashem, it's considered bad. By Torah is considered this thing is this institution is not considered a good thing.
The Torah recognizes that there was a slave trade, not only among goyim but even among Jews. But I don't think that the Torah wants people to be avodim. To the contrary, you find the Gemara says koine eved kakodin odin la'atzmoi. If you go and buy, for instance, an eved ivri, you have to go and treat him with a full respect and dignity of all of your family members. You now let it go and give him to do meaningless work, which is totally irrelevant, which you don't need. When you have only one bed, you can't go and take the bed for yourself and tell him you sleep on the floor. If you have only one meal to eat it for yourself and leave him hungry, you have to go and share alike with avad. So you see from the Chazal that one's supposed to have rachmanis on an evid. So apparently that's not considered to be desirable, something that we should be compassionate and have mercy for.
I thought it was like a rehabilitation system rather than putting him in jail. There
is a case of an Eved Ivri that's sold because of the fact that he stole and he doesn't have money to go and pay. So instead of putting him in debtor's prison, he would go and be raised by this family and he would go and compensate them by his work. And presumably, the chinuch and the hashpoz toivis of the family would cause him to leave his crooked ways and go on to ways of good. But anyway, that's all the parsha of Avodim. All we have to know for the purpose of our Mishnah is that if and when there was a slave trade, this individual who now is Nebuch, missing an eye, missing a tooth, missing an arm, broken leg, whatever it happens to be, how much would he have been sold for a week ago, and how much is he being sold for today? So until now, he looked like a strong, healthy young man. He went for twice $10,000. Now that he's Nebuch missing an arm, he's only worth $5,000. He's worth $2,000. He can't go and pick up all the heavy burdens that a slave would normally schlep because he's missing an arm. Or he can't see everything, he's missing an eye. But obviously, his value would go down dramatically depending on the nature of the injury. Whatever that difference in price is, that's how much you have to go and pay this individual. Tsar, what's tsar? Koivai. You have a person who until now, Baruch Hashem, Rashi used the expression that he was mu'unig, that he happens to be a normal, regular person that enjoys life. And unfortunately, what happened is, you want to go and inflict upon him a very, very painful type of experience. How? Putting a shpud, presumably a very, very hot iron, like from a grill, from a spit, a spit, or the masmer, to going and taking a metal nail, not a fingernail, a metal nail, and Nebuch sticking it into his flesh, even if you're just doing this on his fingernail, you're causing this heat, or you're putting on this nail and you're causing a tremendous pain. Even if it doesn't even make a wound, a physical wound, he doesn't lose any value as a result, but it's extremely painful. How much would a person want to take to accept upon himself this tzar? And Igmar will explain this in greater detail, because most people wouldn't want the tzar for any amount of money. Even if you pay me $1 million, they're not interested in getting burned here, there, or everywhere. Igmar will talk about it more. Ripoy, how much is ripoy? If a person chas shalom hits somebody else, and now that person requires medical attention, chayla rabbeisa, you have to go and pay for the medical bills. If afterwards boils went and crept up on his body, they grew on his body, in machmas amaka, chayv shel machmas amaka, potter, depending on whether it's directly related to the hit or not. If it's directly related, then you got to go and pay. If not, you're potter. Choyse v'nistera, chayv d'rapoyse. Choyse kol tzor, ken tzor d'rapoyse. What happens if it got healed temporarily, but it opened up again? Healed again. In other words, it happened multiple times. You thought it all went away and keeps on cropping up. You have to continue to go and pay the medical bills. But once it's totally healed, and likewise, 5 years later, something unrelated, it happens, then of course, you're off the hook. That's no longer related to what you were doing or what you did. Disability is, you go and pay him how much he would be able to go and fetch as a shoyme kishuan. Shemi Kishuan was considered to be a very menial labor that did not require a person to be a rocket scientist. He didn't even need simple computer skills. All he had to do was basically stand there in the field and be a watchman, so that people and animals, etc., would not try to go and steal the Kishuan, the gourds, or any other crops in the field. A farm doorman, so to speak, watching over the whole field to make sure that nobody was causing service. Now, why do you go and pay him that amount of disability? Why don't you pay him disability if he was the president of IBM or of Google or one of these companies who are earning presumably in the millions a year? Now he's disabled, so why don't we talk about that? So the Mishnah says, the fact that he's no longer able to go and be the head of IBM or Google, because of the saximius eina kiteas yada, if that takes away from his ability to do that fancy schmancy job that he was doing previously, that earned him the millions, that he was already compensated for. That's the kama hoyu yofa, the kama hu yofa. The fact that he can no longer be the CEO, CFO, chairman of the board because of his disability, that you got to pay, like the Eved Bashuk. So now that you've paid for that, you've now equalized him with a person that no longer has the ability to be the chairman of the board. He can only be a Shemek Yeshua, but even that he cannot do because Nebuch is in the hospital for the next 2 weeks. Then you have to pay him disability for 2 weeks. So he wasn't able to at least earn the wages of a Shemek Yeshua. But there is no set amount. It really all depends on the person who inflicted the shame and the embarrassment, and the person who was the inflictee, the person that was Mavuyish. Rashi says, Odom choshev yeh by hakalfi hamavayish. Odom kal shebiyesh by shasay meruba. If you have a real nobody that's mavayish, then there's a greater busha. Or the same punkt fakert, that if he happens to be a greater person, he's mavayish. He's a lighty gaze, a nobody anyway. But choshev a person. If you're just going and embarrassing one of the riffraff, okay, so big deal, he gets probably bush every day of the week. But Adam Choshiva, the president, if you go and mavayish him, etc., etc. Okay, Zotimar. We start off at the beginning of the Mishnah that you have to go and pay for Nezek. You have to go and pay money. How do you pay money? Based on the Eved in the Shuk. The Pasuk talks about Chas Hashem making a Chabola, a Chabura to someone else. He knocks out the other guy's eye, which was one of the cases of our Mishnah, a case of Simias Enai. Who says he's supposed to go and pay for that? Maybe you go and inflict the same wound on the person that was the one that started off the whole Tzura by knocking out the other guy's eye. Let's go knock out his eye. Parshi Pshat Ema Ayin Mamish. Don't lose all good items. It's Kanye's eye. Sign you because it's limited by Siyokas, it's Ayin Minim Sami, it's Ayin. Kitiya Siyodoi, Mikateya Siyodoi, Shibis Ragle, Mishabis Ragle. I would think that a person who inflicted this type of wound, that Chas Shalom, he blinded someone, or he amputated the other guy's arm, or Chas Shalom, he caused the other person's regal to break. Maybe we should do the same thing to him. Ayin Tachas Ayin, Shein Tachas Shein, Yod Tachas Yod, Regal Tachas Ragle. Tam Aloima, we have a Hekish. We have one pasuk that says Maki Adam. Another says Maki Behema. Which pasuk exactly is that? We don't know yet. The Gemara is going to explore that in a few lines. But we have two psukim which are next to each other. Maki Adam and Maki Behema. Maki Behema. The Teshlumin. Just like if someone causes a wound to a Behema, how by giving it some sort of wound, breaking one of the forelegs, one of the back legs, hind legs, blinding the animal, etc. You don't go and say, ayin tachas ayin on the person that caused this damage, but rather you got to pay for it. If the person's going to go and tell you, no, that's not a good hekish, why would a person say it's not a good hekish? The Gemara will ask that kasha a little bit further down the Omid. What's the nafshach loimah that you're not happy with this hekish? How do you have another right? Says Nepotus, koifer nefesh roitzeach, ashehu rosha lomus, that don't go and take koifer for nefesh roitzeach. Sai, if he happens to be amazed, don't go and take money. Sai, if he's a shogi, don't take money. Rather, if he's amazed, you have to go, if they're edim and hasra, you gotta go and kill the person. And if he's a shogi, he has to go to lomus, to the ir miklat. But you don't go and take koifer. It's not like in Chappaquiddick, you go and give the guy $20 million and they're off the hook for killing the girl. No such thing. Here you don't take koifer. So you stay in pussy. Okay. Ashurash alomas. So what's the right in this pussy? The nefesh should say chiyatalikiyah koifer. For someone who chas v'shalom kills, you don't take koifer. However, if you cause permanent damage, for instance, you amputated the other guy's arm or leg or whatever, in such a case, then you do take koifer, meaning you do take monetary payments as opposed to amputating his arm or his leg because of the damage that he caused. So that's the end of that price. Now let's get back to the earlier part of the price. The earlier part of the price says, I have the maki oda maki behemah hekish, ma maki behemah tashlumin. Amaki Adam the Shum, Pregimar Hai Maka, Ilema Hai Maka, which Maka we talk about in the Torah? Ilema Maka Behemi Shomen, Umaki Adam Yumas. We have one Pasik that brings the two together in one Pasik. Maka Behemi Shomen, Umaki Adam Yumas. Aha, okay, the Maka Behemi Shomen clearly means that you go and pay for the damage. So maybe Maka Adam Yumas, you learn from this, you pay for the damage. So you want, no. That's certainly not the Pasik that we're learning from. How we talk it? It's to my Yumas. When you go and hit somebody, hurt somebody, even if it happens to be a terrible, terrible wound, he doesn't get misa for that. So yumas means that Maki Odomi gave them a fatal wound, that Nabuch a deathly wound, that Chas V'Shalom that killed the guy. So that was talking about killing, not talking about compensation for damage or injuries. So Ibazoi, again, what's this Maki that you're learning the heckish one to the other? Elamiyacha! It says in one pasuk, Maki Nevish Behema Yishalmena, Nevish Tachas Nefesh. The Samach Lein, have next to that, you have another pasuk, the Ish Kiyitha Mumba Misoi Kesher Osa Kenyi Osa Loi. So just like by the Maki Nevish Behema Yishalmena, you pay for the Nefesh. You don't Chas V'Shalom kill a person for being Maki Behema, you pay. That's monetary damages. Same thing, Ish Kiyitha Mumba Misoi. When you cause a mum to somebody else, Kesher Osa Kenyi Osa Loi, doesn't mean Takla Ayin Tachas Ayin, but rather it means you go and pay money. But the problem is, the Lashon HaBraisa was that I learned Maki or the Maki Behema. This second passage doesn't use the word Maki. It says, Ishki Yitam Mumba Misai. Fedi Mahela Maki. Everything when I call, come and read on. The Lashon HaBraisa was not precise. We don't really mean Maki. Maki really mean I call a person who hits the other guy, because the Lashon of Ishki Yitam Mumba Misai, how did he cause a Mumba Misai? By hitting him. So that's what the Torah means. And then Rashi brings from the famous Chazal that we have throughout the Gemara, the Shava coin, a Boa coin, which you have the Gabe, a bias where you have the Negat Saras on the bias. So the Pasuk said, the Shava coin, a Boa coin, we learn halachas one from the other, Zui Shiva, Zui Bia, even though these are two separate words. Shiva and Bia, Shiva means to return, Ovakai means to come. However, since they both have the same connotation, that the Kohen is coming from somewhere else, coming to inspect and visit the bias of the neged tzaras. So here too, even though these are two different words, this is makkeh and this is ish kita mumba misa, it means in context, it means the same thing. So therefore, sitting on makkeh, amur b'beimel tashlumen, from over the ba'odim le tashlumen. Pray to Mavak Siv. I have another pasuk, v'ish ki yake kol nevish odam mois yumos. Aha, okay. So it says over there that a person who casts a sholem goes and hits somebody else. Now, even though the pasuk uses the term mois yumos, Rashi quickly points out that it doesn't mean literally mois yumos, because the next pasuk right after that says ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein. So therefore, this yumos is not meant literally. It just really means to go and he caused a fatal injury to the other person's arm or leg. That therefore you have to go and be maimus his arm or leg, but not literally, but through mamain, through money. But the Gemara assumes in the Havamina that you're supposed to go and do this literally to be maimus the individual for the misa that he caused. Again, we don't mean literally death. Rashi points out it's talking about Rashi Evarim, because the next passage says ayin tachas ayin. So I would think that if he went and killed the other guy's eye, should go and kill his eye. Everything more, no, bin mamon, it's talking about taka with money. Maybe taka ayin taka sayin, an eye for an eye, literally. That's the hekesh that we had before, you learn one for the other. Boy, I have yet another pasuk. Before the other pasuk was ken ye osalo, here's kasher ken ye nosim boy. So therefore, in the scene is talking about money. Shema mina mamin meretach legabi gelt. We don't mean literally eye for an eye. Going back to the brisa, after we finish the makkah hako, the brisa, the nafshe chloim, if you're not happy with this trash, I have another pasuk. My nafshe chloim, what's bothering the brisa? So tomorrow, suka kash litana, my choses, the yalfas, me makkah behema, leva makkah odam. Who says you should go and learn from makkah behema? Maybe you should go and learn from makkah odam, meaning the pasuk that we had before, that we started off the Gemara, Maki Odom Yishalmena, or Maki Behemi Yishalmena, Maki Odom Yumas, and that Maki Odom Yumas means literally to go and be maimed, to go and kill the person if he killed somebody else. So let's learn from there. It's just like Chas Hashem by Misa, if you kill somebody, you kill the murderer. If Chas Hashem, someone kills the other guy's eye, maybe you should go and kill his eye. So if you're learning Hakar Kar, don't learn from the Behema to play Tashlumin. Learn from Maki Odom Yumas. The Chas Hashem, you go and kill his eye, kill his leg, kill his arm. Everyone, Amri done in Nizakim, Nizakim done in Nizakim, me, Misa. I'd rather go and learn Nizakim from Nizakim. In other words, Maki Behema, which is talking about a Maka of an arm or leg, a hind leg, a foreleg. Same thing by Maki Odom, talking about a Hezek. But don't learn it from Maki Odom Yumash, which is talking about Chas Hashem, real, real Misa. Nah, I rattle in Nizakim and Nizakim. Vedi Ma'adra, but done on the Odom, and done on Odom and Behema. Wouldn't it be better off learning one Maki Odom from another Maki Odom, as opposed to a Maki Odom from Maki Behema? To Mahani Dutani, that's why the price is in Nafshe Chloimar. If you're not happy with the Maki, because you'll say, not learn it up from that Hakoko. Rather, let's learn Maki Odom from Maki Odom. I have another positive. If Chas Hashem, you killed somebody else, you cannot get off the hook even by paying $20 million. But then you do get off the hook by the Rosh Yevarim. You pay the money, and then we do not Chas Hashem amputate his arm or his leg. You pay. So that's why you have to have the second Rosh in case you have a problem with a makimaka to learn from another makim. I need this pasuk for something else, not to go and say that legabi misa I atal kiach koifer, but by Rosh Yevarim atal kiach koifer, but to rather teach you another halacha, to go and tell you the like the din of komi b'drabim minei, that we only give him one. Yeah, that's going to be the next drasha. That you only give him one punishment, you don't give him two punishments, and therefore maybe that's what the pasuk comes to. It's enough that he's going to go and die. Don't require him as well to go and pay damages to the victim or the victim's family. That's what the pasuk comes to tell you, and therefore it's not coming to tell you the din of Rosh Yevarim. That I have from another drush. I don't need this pasuk alagabe like sikul kaiflan efshir tzeach to tell you not to go and get both money and to go and kill the murderer. Oh, I might have thought that a person has two options. Option number one is, if chas v'shalom, person killed somebody else, you go and kill him. The other option is, if he happens to be a wealthy guy, then he can go and pay $20 million, and then he can get off the hook. I paid the victim quite fair, I gave him money, and therefore I shouldn't have to be killed. And therefore, not that the pasuk is telling you, don't take both tashlumins, but maybe the pasuk is telling you don't have a second option. There is no choice. You have to get chas v'shalom. A murderer has to be killed. Says Mar Imkain, Lichtu Rachman leSikhu Koifel laAsher Hu Rasha Lomus leNefesh Ritzeich Lomali. These two words Lenefesh Ritzeich are Ibrik, because that whole pasuk is talking about a case of Ritzicha. So it'd be enough to go and tell Sikhu Koifel laAsher Hu Rasha Lomus. If he has been sentenced to die, don't take Koifel. Don't take money instead. So what I need is Nefesh Ritzeich. Shema Min Adam Shteich Yatalikeach Koifel. You don't go and take money for a murderer, but you do take money from a guy that Chas v'Shalom murdered somebody else's Rosh Yevarim. He killed the other guy's eye or arm or leg, etc. This is such a good drasha that I don't need the first makke makke, which we had a problem with, because who says learn makke makke from behaima? Learn makke adam me adam. So let's just learn the second drasha. If I would only have the second limud from this, that again, the person has two choices. You don't have two choices. There, if he's a murderer, you kill him, he cannot go and pay his way out of being sentenced to death. However, in the case of the Ayin Tachas Ayin, what happens if the person says, the other guy's ayin is worth a lot of money, I don't want to go and pay 100,000, a million, 5 million. You know what? Take out my eye. You have a choice. Only the teshlumen. And maki odom only the teshlumen. There is no physical eye for an eye. It's only compensation of an eye for an eye. Have a wonderful day, Rabbi Yisai. Mitchum, to be continued tomorrow.